Hey, this is Dave, and you're listening to Episode 2 of Superhero Speak. On April 13th, I was at New York Comic Book Marketplace, and I met this cool artist named Comics, that's spelled C-A-L-M-I-X-X. He owns and operates Cyberhouse 5. It's a fun little website you should check out. Well, we got talking, found out we had a lot in common, and had a good time. Next thing you know, I invited him on the show. On April 25th, 2013, we recorded this. It was recorded over Skype, so please forgive any audio issues there might be. But the show was a lot of fun, and I think you'll enjoy it. Here we go.
Comics, welcome to the show. You are the owner and operator of Cyberhouse 5. Why don't you tell the listeners a little bit about the website, those who don't know about it.
Okay, Cyberhouse 5. Essentially what it is I am a hack artist. I do about one illustration a day, usually superhero or zombie related, always pop culture related. I do one a day, and then once a week, usually on a Wednesday, I do like a true story that has actually happened in my honest life. They're usually pretty funny. Usually. Not always. But they're always free.
Yeah, I was actually checking it out the other day, and I was reading the story about what happened to you at Comic Book Marketplace, and how there was a guy who was, I guess, stalking your table, and it was kind of funny, and I've seen those guys at many conventions. And
I didn't understand. It was like he wouldn't leave, but he didn't like anything, you know?
Yeah, I guess, I don't know. Sometimes I think those guys are just kind of looking for something free, but then when I read the whole story, you know,
I offered him free stuff.
Exactly, he didn't even take that. It was quite interesting.
Interesting, that's a word for it.
So how'd you get started doing this?
I've been a writer for a really long time, And I always liked writing comic books. I wrote a book called Unhappy Smiley Face Man versus the Box Makers of Mars. And I wrote it all in longhand and Sharpie marker, and I really wanted to turn it into a comic book, but I couldn't hook up with the right artist. That's really difficult to do. So I was like, the hell with it. I'm going to draw it myself. And then I realized, hey, I can kind of sort of draw a little bit if you squint. And it kind of went from there, you know?
No, I mean, your art definitely has a humor to it that is very appealing. You know, I really can't explain it because there isn't, you know, it's not.
It's cool.
Yeah, you know, there's a nerd, there's like a nerd vibe to it, you know, something that you definitely could get behind. You know, it definitely appealed to me, and that's one of the reasons I asked you to be on the show, you know.
Oh, cool. Very cool. Yeah, it was fun meeting you guys. I had such a good time there. That was the best show ever.
Yeah, that is a cool show. Yeah, for those who don't know, we met not this last weekend, the weekend before, in New York at a one-day show called New York Comic Book Marketplace, and it's run by Mike Carbonaro. And for those who don't know, he started Big Apple Con back in the early 90s, which at the time was the only convention in New York, and it was the convention to go to, and it was very comic book-centric. It wasn't about celebrities or anything like that. It was comic artists, comic book writers, and, you know, a couple celebrities here and there, but no real big names like some of the conventions are today. And he sold the convention, I believe, in 2008 to Wizard. And they only did it for 2 years, and then they kind of dropped it. And he was under contract. This is my understanding. He's under contract with Wizard that he can't start it up again. So he started this one-day show, New York Comic Book Marketplace, and he's done it for 3 years now, and it's a decent little show. I mean, there's a lot of great artists to come out, and it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was definitely cool. I mean, a lot of people come out for it, you know. There's a definite difference in the vibe between that kind of show and, like, a New York Comic Con.
Yes.
Like, I just noticed today, coincidentally, that, you know, I had a New York Comic Con in my feed on Facebook wanting me to buy tickets for their show. And they want like $50 to walk in the door on a Saturday.
Yeah.
Just in the door, you know? You get nothing. they don't even cover your train fare, you know? And it's like, it's wall-to-wall people. You can't move on the floor. You can't talk to anybody. It's nothing but lines. You're lucky if you see two panels while you're there, and you spend $50 to walk in, you know?
No, I mean, that is so true. It's getting ridiculous. It's become very big business. And we were talking about this at the show a little bit, where, you know, nerd culture has now become pop culture. Right. And there's a lot of big money in it, and, you know, it's kind of scary in a way.
Yeah, it's like, you know, it's funny, like, when we were younger, and we were the only people who were into this kind of thing, you know, it was like this cool little secret that nobody else got, you know, right. And now everybody gets it, and they act like it's their own, and that's cool, you know, because we're not generally the type of a genre that wants to exclude anybody. But by the same token, does every freaking superhero have to be dark and brooding and, you know...
Yes, exactly. I mean,
Adam West Batman now, you know?
Right. I mean, and even the new Superman movie, I mean, that's going to be a lot darker than what we're used to, and Superman has never been that character.
Because that's really what's been missing for 50 years, you know? Dark enough. It's crazy. Just, I mean, that movie looks cool, but it does have that Nolan stamp of dread on it already.
Right, right. Oh, yeah, that's... Yeah, actually, we talk about it in the first podcast, and we didn't really get into that aspect of it, but they're definitely, you know, they're going away from the Nolanverse. They're going, I mean, not the Nolanverse, the Donnerverse. They're going away from all of the stuff we're used to with Superman, and it'll be interesting, I think.
Yeah, it's funny. My buddy Joe Boo and I were just talking about Superman 2. I listened to your show earlier.
Okay.
And we were talking about Superman 2 and about how that was like. There was an emotional response, you know, when he kneels before Zod and crushes his hand, you know, you felt like a swelling in your chest, you know, like, oh God, he's back, you know, you don't feel that way anymore, you know, in any of these superhero movies. The only one I think that's come close is Avengers, you know, when Cap turns to Hulk and, you know, he's doing the call off to all of them, and he turns to Hulk and he goes, Hulk smash. That's like the last time, I think, in like 20 years that something has really emotionally affected me in a superhero movie like that.
No, I totally agree with that. Yeah, especially because I think with the Avengers, there was such a build-up. I mean, there were so many movies leading up to the Avengers. You were like, yay, you know, finally when it happened, there was that release of... emotion where in some of the movies now they're trying to get you to that release like right away.
Yeah,
you know,
trying to fake it.
Yes.
You gotta give Marvel and Kevin I think it's pronounced Feige, I think, I'm not sure. But you gotta give them a lot of credit, man. They had a plan and they just stuck with it, and they didn't rush it, they didn't break it. They did exactly what they set out to do, and there was a hell of a payoff. Even when people were bitching about, like, Iron Man 2, all the S.H.I.E.L.D. stuff in it, you know?
Oh, yeah,
that really paid off. That was an excellent movie. Group of movies.
Yeah, and I think their biggest plus on their side is, at least towards the end, you know, you get the biggest fanboy on the planet, Josh Whedon, to come in and helm it.
Yeah, he's awesome.
Yeah.
He just gets it, you know. He understands it. He knows what the beats are. He knows what's going to draw the emotional response, what's going to make the diehard crazy comic book fans, you know, satisfied, and what's going to make your grandmother enjoy it too, you know?
Exactly. Well, that's another thing. Like, The Dark Knight, with as great of a movie as that was, I couldn't take my son to it because I felt like Two-Face was too over the top. It was too grotesque for, you know, an 8-year-old boy to go see that in the movie theater.
Yeah, you know, I gotta be honest with you. In hindsight, the Nolan Batman movies, they're like in Elseworlds. Remember Elseworlds?
Yes.
Like they do like a prestige format graphic novel that, hey, this isn't in our regular continuity, but what if Superman landed in Russia? You know, like that kind of thing.
Right, right.
It's kind of the way I think of a Nolan Batman movie. It's not really Batman, you know?
Right.
It's cool, and I like it, but it's not Bruce Wayne, you know? Bruce Wayne doesn't go away for 8 years because his girlfriend got blown up.
Exactly.
he's always sad. That's kind of his thing. You know, it's just it really, some of it rang really true and some of it was real cool. I loved how they did like the almost, it sounds so stupid to say real world because it's so fictional, but I really enjoyed the way that they did, you know, the Tumblr and all the tech, you know, like they yes. kind of explained the tech, like, and here's why he has this and how that came about. So you could sit back and go, all right, I'll buy that. You know, I'll suspend my disbelief. But then the stories got so convoluted. We were talking one day and we realized, you know, in the three movies, Batman became Batman, came to Gotham, made it a lot worse. And by the end of Batman, I mean, Dark Knight Rises, he's just about destroyed that friggin' city. You know, it's
like, if exactly.
he had shown up, they would have been so much better off.
No, that is so true. Right? Yeah, I could have lived with the organized crime before all the crazies came out.
Exactly. Nobody ever blew up our bridges before this guy came. It was safe to go to a football game before that son of a bitch put a mask on, you know?
Yes. So, so let's talk about that a little bit, about you a little bit. Well, you're obviously a comic book fan. What was, like, when you were growing up, what was the comic book that you read?
I was a huge fan of Batman and Spider-Man. I loved Spider-Man. I thought, and matter of fact, whenever we go to these shows, I see Jim Salicro. And Jim was the man when I was growing up. Mm-hmm. And behind Venom, he was behind, you know, all the really cool stuff that happened to ruin Peter Parker's life when I was a teenager, where, you know, he had his hand in there, you know? And I talked to him about that a couple of times now, and he just looks at me like I'm nuts. He's like, all right, you know, I'm so glad you're a fan. Great. Would you like to buy a Smurf book? He's such a cool guy, you know, and really, he's actually becoming quite a good artist as himself. He was an editor, and I don't know, he actually inspired me a little bit.
Right.
A lot of it, because, you know, the first time we bumped into him, I want to say it was either at one of the Big Apple shows, or it might have been at New York Comic Con where he was there with Paper Cuts, a book company that he works for.
Mm-hmm.
He was doing lousy sketches for $5. So you walk around, you know, Comic Con, and everything is $50 for a headshot, $120 for a body. You know, any original art you want is so expensive.
Right.
And here's Jim Salicrup. He wants $5 to draw the Hulk for me, you know. So that was pretty cool. And then when I finally got to the point where I was ready to do a show and I was ready to sell, people were like, well, how much are you going to sell for, you know, one of your prints? And I was like, $1. And they were like, $1? Are you crazy? How are you going to make any money? And I'm like, Jim Salicrup sells his pictures for $5. I'm not even Jim Salicrup. You know, I'm going to sell for $5. And that, thankfully, that's really worked for me a lot better than I expected it to.
Yeah, no. And, you know, I think you're doing the right thing. In the sense of, you know, you're starting out in anything, you're marketing yourself, you're trying to get your name out there, you're trying to get people interested in your art. So if you walk in with these prints and say $10 a print, well, people are just going to walk by it.
That's right. Now I'm going to take my $10 and $40 more and get somebody competent to draw me a picture. I don't take it very seriously. If you have.
And I think that's another thing that's very appealing about it. You know, you're the stories on your website. You're giving a glimpse into your life, and it's honesty. You know, it's art in that way where you're putting yourself out there. You're telling a funny little story. You're doing a funny little drawing, and it takes a lot of bravery to do that. You know, and it's, I think it's something that people should be commended for. You know, that people look at your art and probably go, oh, he doesn't know what he's doing. And it's like, no, that's, you know exactly what you're doing. It's your voice.
Well, thank you. I'm glad you see that, because that is the case. Lots of people do look at my art and say he doesn't know what he's doing.
No, it's cool. You know, I mean, that's the thing, you know. And I guess it's, you know, I hear talk about this kind of stuff a lot where, you know, we're in the world today where the internet's out there and everyone has a voice. I mean, you know, I've got a podcast now, and it's something I've wanted to do for a long time, and you have your art, and you know, Joey down the street has a blog, and sure, is putting stuff out there, and yeah, there's the issue where, okay, we're getting inundated with millions of pieces of information, but when there's something true to it, and there's something real to it, it's art, you know, when it's not just a commercial thing, you're not just trying to sell me a product, you're trying to tell me a story, you know? And I think people need to sift through all the digital garbage and find the real art, you know?
It's funny, and thank you very much. I appreciate that. I look at it this way. If nobody was looking at my stuff, and nobody was going to my website, and nobody was enjoying this, these drawings and these stories that I tell, I would still be doing it.
Right.
I think that that's the difference, you know? I would do it just for me, because I enjoy doing it.
Yes.
You know? And if somebody else likes it, that's great, but it's okay with me if you don't get it. I do. You know?
Right. No, that's what makes it cool. That's what makes it art, I think. You know? The other thing I wanted to ask you about on your website, and you had mentioned this also a little bit at the convention. I guess it was Geek Propaganda was your old website?
Yeah, we ran – me and my best friend in the world, Brother Joe Boo, ran Geek Propaganda for about 4 years, I think. Just about 4 years, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It was wonderful.
And what happened with that?
Well, what happened with it was that we kind of got to a point in our lives where we were like, you know what the hell are we doing? We get up every day, we go to work, we work an 8-hour job, you know, come home, watch movies, watch TV, you know, read a comic book, or play a video game. We used to play Gears of War till 4 a.m,
yeah.
You know. And one day we were like, there's got to be some way. We like this so much. We like this kind of stuff so much. There's got to be a way we can get in touch with it, you know? So we started writing about it, you know? We started writing about our opinions and our feelings and our experiences with all of these kinds of things. And that kind of led to us making this website and all of a sudden getting people inviting us to, hey, try this game, you know? Or here, you know, some person who makes a Wii peripheral sends it to us in the mail and they want to know what we think of it. You know, it was kind of cool for a while, you know?
Right.
Book companies, or you'd come home to, you know, $200 worth of books on your front step and they just want you to read them, you know? And they got a lot of fun. We got movie passes. We got to go to Comic-Con. We got to interview countless people. I mean, I sat in a room with Kevin Conroy and Bruce Timm for an hour and a half and it was like, I just couldn't even believe it.
Right.
You know, standing right there with them, and it was no big deal. And, you know, hey, you guys want passes to this? And it was a whole lot of fun. And then one day it stopped being fun. One day it became work.
Okay.
And when we finally figured out why it wasn't fun anymore, we realized it was because we weren't creating anything. We were always talking about what other people created.
Right.
In the beginning, when we created the website, that was fun, you know, yes. We're creating something. But once it was made, it just became a factory, you know. And we had somebody else, Darren, who what a great kid she is. I have no idea what her real name is. I don't know where she lives, but she, you know, she wrote to me one day and she sent me this the most earnest letter you've ever read. It was like, you know, I would really like to write for your site if that would be okay, please, sir. You know, we're dying. We're like, are you kidding me? Of course it's okay. Please do, you know. Hey, you want the site? You know, you can. And so that went on for a little while longer. And then finally I decided it was time to do something else. And we had built so much, though, and it had gotten fairly popular. I mean, we certainly weren't Engadget or, you know, Ain't It Cool News or anything.
Right.
But we had marketing, you know. We had advertisers coming to us. Saying, let me give you this much money to put my logo on your site for a month, you know?
Right.
And we finally got to the point where we were like, you know what, enough of this, let's walk away. And I thought it'd be really cool to kind of find, like, quote-unquote, the next generation, you know, because we're old, we're not young. And I'm 42 years old at this point.
Okay.
And we were like, let's find some young geeks who are really into this stuff and give them this pre-built palace. And that fell apart. It was a total nightmare. It was terrible. So met the meanest, most degenerate fucks ever. Pardon my French.
No, that's fine.
The whole thing, but whatever.
Well, and there's a question too. Like, do you think the younger geeks, nerds of today are different than we were when we were kids?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And it's not always. It's not a bad thing, you know. It's they are just this whole. This whole new generation, they're just different from us in every way, you know? The way they think, the way they act, the way they consume media, you know? they don't have any interest in owning anything.
Right. No, it's so true. I never thought about it. One of the podcasts that I listen to is Kevin Smith's Fat Man on Batman, and he was talking about this the other day. And one of the things that he mentioned, and I never really thought about this before, is, you know, when we were kids and we were collecting comics, if you needed issue 397 of Amazing Spider-Man, you went to the comic book shop every week and kept looking through the back bins until somebody brought it in.
Or you waited in vain for the New York Comic Book Marketplace and you ran there.
Right, right. And
you know?
And in today's world, kids just jump on eBay.
That's it. Jump on eBay. They don't even have to. They just torrent it. Just download it. It's out there.
Right, right. Well, and that's a whole other debate, is the digital comics versus the printed books. I mean, I'm always going to be a fan of printed books, but I understand they take up, you know, space, but to me it's also part of the collecting, you know?
Well, I think that's part of the difference between us and them, you know? To us, it's a thing. It's a tangible item that I own, that I put in a plastic bag and hide in a box. And, you know, 20 years from now, I'll be heartbroken to find out it's worthless. You know, they read the story, enjoyed it, and okay, what's next?
Right, right. It's just about consuming the media as opposed to collecting something.
Yeah.
Right, and it's tough when I see that. You know, I get leery that not so much that nerd culture is going to go away, but, you know, kids don't learn to appreciate things the way we did.
You see, I did this with my daughter, and I've done this with every young person that I've ever gone to a comic book convention with. I steer them away from Lou Ferrigno. You know? Nothing wrong with Lou Ferrigno.
No.
I mean, you know, steer them away from this, you know, the circuit of guys who are making their living that way. Not that there's anything wrong with that. It's not like Lou Ferrigno can go work at Wendy's, you know?
Right.
But it's not like he's not, you know, there aren't people who want to go and see him, you know? But you try to bring them, I try to at least, to bring them to the artist alley, you know, where they have the artist, and say, you know, that stuff you love so much, well, this is who made it.
Right.
This is who came up with the idea for that. You know, Neil Adams, perfect example. Oh, my God, what a great guy he is.
Yes.
And he'll talk to artists, he'll talk to anybody for hours. And what you don't realize is, it is the total breadth of experience that this guy has had, you know? He didn't just do, you know, the Mego packaging for Batman, although he did, which is pretty
right.
He also, you know, he designed the Terminator ride at Universal Studios. He's responsible for the Nason XB. Did you know that?
No, I didn't.
Adams, baby. The Nason XB. And he's just an interesting guy to talk to, you know. He's had so many experiences. And the sad truth of it is, you know, it's not just Neil Adams. These guys are getting older. And they're not going to be around, you know. Stan Lee is a little bit different. You know, Stan's a great guy. And I truly, I've only met him in passing like two or three times.
Mm-hmm.
And once I had his full Asian female ninja squad try to take me down. Because I said hello too close, I guess, but he's almost being marketed now, and it's weird, you know. There's a difference between meeting Jim Salicrup, Neil Adams, and Stan Lee, and yet 30 years ago there was really no difference, you know.
Yeah, no, that's true. I mean, fortunately, I got to meet him last year at the same convention, New York Comic Book Marketplace. I had the honor of working with him at his table.
Man, I would have loved that.
It's definitely true. Like, now that convention is different, and it is more about the comics, so there wasn't that so much the ultra fanism around him at that convention. But every other convention I've been to, especially the Wizard ones, where he's there, you know, he's with the celebrities, not in the artist alley, and you know, he's got a huge line, and like you said, you can't get close to him without the female ninja squad jumping you, and it's like it's so different, and it's like, well, but you know, when you actually meet the man and you talk to him, he's like one of the most humble people you've ever met.
Yeah.
And it's like, why, you know, a part of me can't imagine that he's comfortable with, you know, how he's treated at the conventions. You know, he'll tell you, you know, he came up with some ideas and he got lucky, you know? And
you know, there's a fascinating book. If you have any interest at all in the comic book industry, pick up Sean Howe's, I can't remember the damn name of it. It's the Marvel, The Untold Story.
Okay.
It's by Sean Howe, H-O-W-E. Look it up, man. The guy, it's like every moment of Stan Lee's career. And it's not a Stan Lee biography. He's just like in the background of what's going on at Marvel Comics through the, you know, the early 60s to like a month before the Avengers opens, you know?
Oh, okay.
The way Stan Lee kind of gets, you know, boxed around and packaged and, you know, almost accidentally falls into this, you know, to the point where he changed his name because, you know, his real name is Stan Lieber, and he was saving that name for when he wrote real books.
Right, yes.
You know? But it's just such an interesting story, and it really explains very well what happened with Jack Kirby and all those old masters who really built this infrastructure that now is paying off so big for Disney. You know,
oh, yeah.
These guys built something that is just, you know, this is our new myths, man. You know, kids don't grow up hearing about the Three Bears anymore. They hear about Spider-Man and Captain America.
No, that's very true. I mean, it's, you know, I mean, it's my son loves Iron Man, you know, watches the cartoon, loved the movies. And, yeah, I mean, but he probably couldn't tell you who the Three Bears are, to be honest with you.
Right? Like we had, for lack of a better, I guess fairy tales that, you know, everybody knew and everybody had the same frame of reference for. And now, you know, another thing about these, you know, this new generation growing up is they don't really have that unless they know it from Disney or they see the bastardization of it in things like Once Upon a Time on ABC or, you know, the way they've turned everything into a dark Twilight-esque drama.
Yes.
And really what they have now is, you know, boys have superheroes and girls have princesses. And, hey, let's try to put Gwyneth Paltrow in the Iron Man suit and see if we can get some of those girls, too.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. And then, right. Or they have Hansel and Gretel witch hunters.
Can I tell you that when I saw the preview for that, on my right hand to God, I swear to God, I thought that was a parody. I thought it was a joke. I had no idea at all that that was a real movie.
Yeah, I wonder the studio execs, when they sit in their boardroom and they talk about what are we going to work on next, like, you know, there's no one with original ideas. Or is it they're just afraid to do original ideas?
They spend so much money on these things, they can't afford to do original ideas. I'm watching something now. It's really cool. I'm on Long Island, and I'm very close to where they're filming The Amazing Spider-Man 2.
Oh.
And they have built Times Square in the back lot of Gold Coast Studios here, and it is so freaking big that you can see it from half a mile away. You know, and when they film at night, they start filming like around 10 o'clock to like 6 in the morning. It's lit up like Christmas. And you sit there and look at it and you think, I can't even begin to imagine what that must cost.
True.
And when you're spending, it's not like a little indie film, you know, I mean, even Burton's Batman movies probably look like indie films next to this thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know? It is such a gigantic production that they cannot, you know, they probably have focus groups for every line of dialogue in the movie.
Yeah.
And it's horrible in one way. It's cool to watch, though. But it's hard. You know?
No, yeah. I mean, and that's another thing. Like when, yeah, I definitely felt that with The Amazing Spider-Man, and it's definitely spilling into the sequels, as it sounds like, that, you know, they needed to compete with the original, the first three that did so well, they had to make them these gigantic, over-the-top budget productions. And it's like, we don't really need that. We need the story of Peter Parker, you know, the struggling teenager.
It's true. And what ends up happening is that, you know, as each of these movies come, they get bigger and bigger and bigger and crazier and crazier and crazier. And everything looks plastic and fake and green screen.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Nothing looks real. I'm watching the trailer for the new Wolverine movie that I'm really looking forward to, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm watching it, I'm totally into it. I'm like, this is so cool. This really looks great, you know? Hugh Jackman is really good in that role. You know, and when the first Wolverine movie, you know, it had a bunch of missteps, but he was good in it, you know. And now it looks like maybe they got a good script and they got this and that, and I'm kind of getting psyched. And then there's that friggin' bullet train, and I'm like, what the hell is that? You know, that looks terrible. Yeah. And it just sucks you right out of it. Number one, you don't believe it because your mind can't accept it, you know, from a physics standpoint. And number two, it looks terrible because, you know, it's just green screen. You know, he's just hanging on a wire pretending to be on a train. You know, it just sucks you right out of it.
Yeah, that is so true.
We had one scene like that did that to me. And it was the money shot where they showed them all fighting in the street. And I was like, if I have one, and I really only have one criticism of that movie, it's that you went to pains to get everything so incredible in that movie, and that shot looks like shit. It looks fake, you know?
Right.
The shot that ends with the Hulk and Thor on the Leviathan, but they do that slow pan up to Hawkeye on the building, and it just looked terrible because everything else looked so good, you know?
Yeah, that's the shot that, like you said, is the money shot. It's the one where if a comic book writer wrote that story, that was going to be the big double page.
Absolutely. That's the spread where you see, you got to spend 5 minutes looking at it because there's so much going on.
Mm-hmm.
And it just looked like crap on film. It was like, oh, look, Hawkeye on a green screen. That's great. You know? Oh, now I recognize those CGI aliens. But again, I love the Avengers. I thought it was awesome.
I still don't understand why they didn't go with the Skrull, though. Why they had to invent another race.
I think, if I'm not mistaken, I think Fox owns the Skrull.
Oh.
It's part of their Fantastic Four properties.
Okay. That's something I didn't know.
That's the one thing that's really kind of heartbreaking in all of this, that Fox has, I mean, Sony has Spider-Man, Fox has, you know, the Fantastic Four and the X-Men, and Marvel is, like, doing such incredible stuff, you know, and they don't get to play. As a matter of fact, in that book by Sean Howe, I wish I had it in front of me. It's such a good book. They talk about that, how those other studios ended up with those things.
Oh, yeah.
It's Fantastic Four, you know, like stuff like that.
Yeah, that's funny. That's actually because I was always a big Spider-Man fan, so I had followed that whole story from the time they started talking about making the movie up until the time I got released that you know, they had sold the rights to one movie company and they ended up deciding not to make the movie and they sat on the rights for years.
Yeah.
And then Sony got them and, you know, as we know, ended up with them, made in the movies and did really well. Then when Raimi walked away from the project, you know, at first Marvel wanted to buy them and Sony was like, no, we have a contract to do 6 movies. We're doing 6. You know, and they basically, the Marvel...
Suck. We're going to do them all.
But Marvel basically said, you know, screw you, then we'll make the Avengers and do a better job.
Yeah. You know what I didn't like about the Amazing Spider-Man movie? I didn't like how they made... I don't mind changes. Like, I'm not the guy who gets all pissed off because Thor never puts a helmet on. I could care less about that.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I liked the organic web shooters in the Raimi films. I was like, well, that makes more sense than some kid figuring out how to do this in his bedroom, you know?
Right.
And I liked how that became like, you know, almost like a glandular thing. It made sense with the, you know, it really, you know, kind of built into the teenage angst kind of part of it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Imagine you're such a freak now, you got shit flying out your wrists, you know? It's like, it's not even, you know, and then turning that into lemonade, you know?
Right.
But what I don't like about The Amazing Spider-Man is that they changed his character. And I don't mean the character of Peter Parker. I mean his actual character, you know? Like, he makes this dying promise to Gwen Stacy's father, and 10 minutes later he's like, yeah, fuck that. You know?
Yeah.
I just didn't... That really bothered me. I was like, who is this punk?
No, yeah, I mean, that's so true. I guess the other thing that bothered me was... he didn't come off in The Amazing Spider-Man so much of as a nerd who gets picked on as he was like a loner skateboarder kid.
Yeah, he was like mean-spirited.
Right.
You know, he's like, he wasn't a nice person. You know, he was, mm-hmm. he wasn't good at his core. I mean, maybe he was, but there was, he had his own levels of shit, you know, for left, but that was very, you know, tactful. But it wasn't like, you know, it wasn't like, oh, poor Peter Parker, he can't catch a break. You know, if he keeps working really hard, maybe things will work out. Oh, now he lost his job. Oh, poor Peter Parker, you know, he'll keep doing his best and, oh, his aunt's sick. You know, it was, hey, Peter Parker's kind of a jerk. Watch him beat up these bullies.
Right.
You know, and that's not, you know, we have a problem now, I think, in our society where we don't know who heroes are. You know, we don't know who to root for. And sometimes we root for, you know, it's real cool to like the bad guys, you know. I think, Dave, if I'm not mistaken, you're about my age, maybe a little younger. Mm-hmm. I think when we were growing up, it was real clear who to root for, you know.
Right.
It was, the Joker was a bad guy, even if he was sometimes funny. You know, you never wanted him to win, and there were certainly never any comic book properties or cartoons, and I use cartoons very, very generally. I mean, animated, I mean, properties that you would think are for children, you know, wherein it was allowed for anything other than that to happen. Now, as far as art and storytelling is concerned, that's fine. You can have an anti-hero. You can have a story take a twist that you weren't expecting. You can have the, look at the end of The Empire Strikes Back. The good guys lose.
Right.
You know, but the moral fiber of that is that they're going to eventually win, or they're going to come back and try again, or in the end there will be justice. And I don't really see that in much now.
No, that's
golden crotchety.
No, that's so true. You know, I mean, yeah, I mean, you can go back as far as early movies, and the good guys always wore the white hats, and the bad guys always wore the black, and it was very.
It was actually supposed to get into your subconscious, you know?
Right? And I think a lot of that changed in the comic book world with the Dark Knight Returns. Wow, I can't think of his name.
Frank Miller.
Frank Miller, thank you. And even though it's one of the greatest Batman stories ever written.
It's not a nice story.
It's not a nice story. And he's come out in interviews and said, you know, he regrets how the comic book world changed after that movie because, you know, it got gritty and dark, you know.
Yeah.
It started with Batman, but then it moved on to other characters. And it's really obvious in the new movies.
And the other thing about that fundamental shift, you know, that really, I guess you're right. It could have started with Frank Miller, definitely Watchmen, you know?
Yes.
Some of that, you know, that, oh, the world is headed for shit and no one's ever going to, you know, it's never going to be good. And if you never see the future that's shiny, except in Star Trek. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Everywhere else, the future is dismal. And man, I'm glad I died. I didn't have to see it. But I think that Miller definitely was one of the first. And it's sad that didn't just become, you know, like one guy's take. It became the whole industry, you know. Even something I'm looking forward to. I'm really looking forward to the new X-Men, you know, where they're going to take the old cast and the new cast and do the Days of Future, you know, Days of Future Past.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, a great Chris Claremont story that I'm sure he's not going to get a nickel for when they make $1 billion. It's going to be dark and dismal, and that's what's going to be what the kids, I think is cool about it, you know? I could be wrong about that, but I hope I'm wrong about that, because kids need heroes, you know? And your hero shouldn't be, you know, just somebody who sticks monsters in a ball, you know? I don't get a lot of the culture now, because I'm old! It's not for me!
Yeah, no, it's funny, because my brother has another podcast that he does called Geeksters, and his co-host on that can't stand Superman. And it's funny. The reason he can't stand Superman is, you know, the concept of, oh, this guy with all these powers, why would he be a good guy? It doesn't make sense to him. And but at the same time, it's about how he was raised. He was raised with good moral fiber, you know.
Superman is not about Superman. It's about Clark Kent.
Right.
That's the story of Superman. He was raised by Kansas farmers. He was, you know, that's what I mean. Like, we don't have things now, at least that I see. You know, Spawn what's, and Spawn is, what, 30 years old, 20 years old now?
Yes.
But what's the moral, you know, what's heroic about Spawn? You know, and that's really where the shift happened, you know, with Dark Knight and Spawn and all those kinds of, you know, I don't want to call them demonic because it sounds so stupid, but you know, all those kind of dark, edgy, for the sake of being edgy, The Crow, you know, all that stuff that was just leads to this, you know, a bunch of goth stuff. And don't misunderstand me, I got no problem with that. I think some of that stuff is awesomely cool, you know.
Right,
I really like it. But what it's led to is that everybody's so fucking snarky, you know. No one's nice anymore.
Oh, that's so true.
Everybody's trying to be more sarcastic than the guy before them. I mean, read a couple of internet message boards. It's like, what the hell is wrong with these people? You know, things that they would never say to your face. All of a sudden, it's worse than beer muscles, you know. All of a sudden, they're ripping each other apart because they put an apostrophe in the wrong place. Or, you know, didn't you realize that 35 years ago, Thor wore a helmet for one issue, and now this guy's in, oh, my God. It makes me sick. I don't even read it. Yeah. Which is kind of what I ran into when I was trying to give geek propaganda away. You know, it was that kind of thing where so these people had come on and they were starting to work. And I don't mean work like work for me, but they were starting to work on their stuff, you know. And I would say, hey, you know what? I've been doing this for a while now, and, you know, maybe try this. And their reaction to it was just, who the fuck are you? You know, and I was like, well, I'm kind of the dude who owns this place, you know. And then they'd be like, well, what the fuck is this place? And I'd be like, well, you know, I didn't ask you. You asked me, you know, and it became just a nightmare. But no, that's Darren's awesome.
No, and that's so true, too, is that, again, with the younger generation, it's like, I have an older daughter who's in college, and thank God she's not this way. But she tells me she sees it. And the kids, where kids don't want to work for stuff, and they don't want to listen to people who have experience, you know, because they think everything is new, and, you know, like, old people don't know anything anymore, and they just want to know, you know, how do I jump online and make $1 million? And it's like, it doesn't work that way.
No, it doesn't, and I think part of it, too, and I mean, I don't think this is an original conversation we're having, I'm sure that everybody, or especially our age, thinks this. I don't understand why they stopped keeping score, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand why they started telling everybody how wonderful they were. I mean, I understand that everybody is wonderful, and I understand that everybody has their own unique things about them, and that's absolutely true. But you can't make that the core of your essence as a human, you know?
Right. It's
what you got to do as a human being, you know, at least as far as I've been able to figure out, is see what you're good at and that you enjoy, and then put effort into that. You know, don't expect that everything you touch is going to turn to gold just because you're so friggin' wonderful, you know, because you're not.
No.
And people win and people lose. And more important than knowing how to win, you need to know how to lose or you're never going to win.
That's true.
We really miss that now with I would imagine the, you know, children being born today to probably right around 10 years old. My daughter's a little bit older than that, and she doesn't really have that, but I see that in kids younger than her, and definitely in talking to parents younger than her. And it goes back to, you know, to tie it back to superheroes, that was an ideal held up for us, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I shit you not, man, when I was 6 years old, if you asked me what I wanted to be, I wanted to grow up and be Batman, you know? And why do you want to be Batman? It wasn't because he had a cool car, you know?
Right.
It wasn't because he had a cave and, you know, and he had a fancy mask. It's because I liked the idea of being the guy who actually saved the day, you know? Who, when he walked into the room, everyone else went, oh, good, he's here. You know, that was really what I was attracted to about it. That's what I liked about it. And I don't see that that happens anymore, you know? I don't see that that's what's actually happening out there in the world. I don't think they have any role model to stand up for them, you know?
Right.
And it's very hurtful is even the wrong word, you know? It's like, it's just sad. You know,
no, and it, to go back to your Peter Parker comment about him being different in this movie, you know, where in classic Spider-Man, Peter Parker's the kid who has all the problems and at home, and he's got a really hard time, and you know he doesn't have an easy life, but yet he tries to be a good person, and he has motivation behind it, but he does everything he can to do the right thing all the time, to strive to be better, you know, and that's the story there.
Right, and do the right thing for the sake of doing the right thing.
But then when you take that away from him and make him the snarky skateboarder kid, and he's just doing it because he has the powers, and you're taking away, you know, kids watching that movie something to say, hey, because now they can go, well, he's really no better than me, you know?
Right.
So, you know, if I had superpowers, of course I'd be good. No.
Right. Yeah, that's really wild. Your brother's partner saying that, you know, why would Superman be good with all those powers? Although I understand it, you know, but why would you be anything but that? Right. It's better to be respected than feared, you know?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, no, but I just kind of feel like there's a lot of people out there who feel that way, who look at these characters and go, oh, well, it's not realistic because people aren't good just to be good. And it's like, do you really want to have that outlook on life? Do you really want to think the world is a miserable place and it's dark and everyone says mean and evil? Well, yeah, you can go on the internet and read all the message boards you want and see that, but try to find the good. Try to find the people that are trying to change the world in the right way. You know?
And you see, what happens is that it starts in the culture, right? It starts in the way kids are raised, and it starts in the way people think, because nobody sits down and consciously decides one day, you know what? I like dark things that are terrible and I'm hopeless. That's what I'm going to be. It's that it's around them. And when you start with, you know, to oversimplify it, when you make every friggin' superhero so dark and brooding, of course these kids grow up in a dark, selfish place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's scary, man. We need more superheroes, and we need I don't really know. I don't know what the hell we need. We need people to go to cyberhouse5.com.
There you go. We need more John Waynes.
Yeah. Oh, shit, yeah, absolutely. More John Waynes. And less John McClane's.
There you go. Nothing against Bruce Willis.
No, well, I don't know, whatever. I think Bruce Willis stopped trying a couple of years ago, and now he just shows up and smirks. You know? Well, last Bruce Willis movie you love because of Bruce Willis.
Hmm.
That was mine. I love that movie.
Yeah, I liked Red. I'm kind of looking forward to Red 2.
I don't think I saw Red.
No?
No.
No, well, but that's also a movie that's, it's not good just because of Bruce Willis. It's the whole, I think the whole concept is kind of funny and it was well done. If you haven't seen it, you know, Netflix it and take a look. It's a good 2-hour laugh, you know.
Definitely Netflix. That sounds cool. Did you see Exit Through the Gift Shop?
No.
Check that out. It's very funny. It's cool.
Okay.
It's about a lunatic artist.
Ah, so it's your life story?
No, not yet. Maybe someday.
All right. So you know. Well, we've been talking for close to an hour now. Is there anything coming up you want to promote?
No, absolutely not. I'm doing my thing in New York. I'm going to be, you know, doing more shows around here. I'll keep putting up as much art as I can create on cyberhouse5.com and doing more stuff like this. I like the format of your podcast. I listened to your one from last week, so I'll definitely be listening to your stuff. I'll be honest with you, I love meeting new people, and that was the coolest thing at the New York Comic Book Marketplace show. I met a lot of people, it was cool. And I'll tell you the truth, if I wasn't doing this with you right now, I'd probably be over at Spat's place helping him with something he was looking for help with tonight.
Oh, okay. I saw that. Funny story. Going on a slight tangent here. For those who don't know, he's actually a good friend of mine. Spat Octon runs Spat Cave Studios, and he's working on stuff right now, and he's looking for help. And I actually ended up helping him the week before New York Comic Book Marketplace. We were at a small con in PA, right outside of Philly, called Amazicon. It was their first show, and they asked him to be a guest. And then while we were there, he's working on a movie that's coming out sometime this year, but they're starting filming at the end of the month, and he's making an alien costume for it. So the guy who is the actor who's going to be in the costume, he came to the show, and we did a body cast of him while he was there at the show. While we were in the, like, behind Spat had a table where we were selling props, so we were behind the table, and we're doing a full body cast, and we did molds of his hands, and it's just like, it was nuts. It was cool, because I'd never got involved with that side of things before, and he was looking for help, and I came and helped him out, but it was really cool, so I'm kind of hoping that this movie works out, so I could sit there and say to people, hey, I helped with that.
That's pretty cool, right?
Yeah.
The guy he is. And we just met, you know, person after person there that was just really, really, really cool. You know, the people from Icon was so much fun, man. I had such a great time with them.
Yeah. To me, that's what cons should be about, you know. And it's really why they started. I mean, it was a place for artists and writers to connect when they really started them out. And it's kind of lost that, you know, because it's become about the celebrity and it's become about the movies. And, you know, I say that I always encourage people and anyone listening in all seriousness, there's a convention in your area somewhere, but find the smaller ones and check them out, you know, because number one, they'll be cheaper to get into and you're going to find independent artists at those shows. And they're the people that are passionate about what they're doing. And they're the people that you want to talk to. They're the cool people, you know. Like, yeah, I mean, no, don't get me wrong. George Perez is one of the coolest and sweetest people on the planet. And if you got 5 minutes to talk to him, talk to him. But, you know, he's past the point where he needs this, you know. But guys like you and half the people that are in Artist Alley at these shows, they're there because they want to be there. Like I said, put a piece of themselves out there and tell the truth about themselves. And, you know, they're the interesting conversations, you know, because you're not going to be sitting there talking about, oh, you were so great on this Teen Titans thing. You're going to be sitting there like, wow, this is really cool. Why are you doing this? Why are you putting this out there? You know, and you connect with people that way.
Absolutely. There's, you're putting together a website, right?
Yes.
All right, I got to ask you, the gentleman who was next to me, Guillermo, and I can't pronounce his last name, he was such a talented artist. He was amazing. And I'm going to send you a link to his stuff.
Okay.
He's somebody you may want to get for the podcast. He's also somebody you might just want to go to his website and check out his work. Because he's cool. Such a great guy. He was so much fun to hang out with.
Yeah, definitely do that.
Yeah, I'm actually looking right now to see if I've got it handy. I'll email it to you, definitely.
Cool.
What a great guy he was. I can't remember his last name off the top of my head, but I've got it.
All right.
Send it to you.
And I'm gonna end the podcast on a personal request. Would you mind doing a piece of art for the website?
Absolutely. What do you want?
Anything. Whatever you feel, you know, passionate about. Like, I don't ever want to tell an artist what to do.
And those are the artists who will never work. All right, I'll draw you a sad little kid with no heroes.
Oh, that would be perfect, actually. Thank you.
All right, man, you got it.
All right, well, this has been a lot of fun.
Yeah, this was fun. Thank you very much for having me, man.
Oh, no, definitely, and maybe we can do this again sometime, too.
Anytime, man.
All right, cool. Well, you enjoy the rest of your night.
You too.
And for everyone...
Me too. That helps Pat.
And for everyone listening, don't let your cape get caught in the door. All right. Have a good night.
Take care, man.
Bye.